This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 274 in the series. This session shares my conversation with Jim Derrick and Jennifer Levine of the SAFE Coalition. We had our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We walked through the development of the coalition from the first meeting at Franklin High School through to the evolution of where they are now with a facility in Norfolk and Jen in the role of executive director. From what was truly a coalition of stakeholders, volunteering and making things happen, to the newly evolved board and executive director role in a nonprofit format to better accomplish their service delivery. And they are continuing to adjust during this pandemic. Among the topics covered, recovery is a journey. Vaping and addiction cessation is something now on the radar when in the beginning it hadn't been. There are a bunch of services, peer-to-peer group meetings, Franklin High School peer-to-peer group, grandparents raising grandchildren, a monthly newsletter is starting, and of course, fundraising begins in earnest to support this new delivery model. The recording runs around 42 minutes, so let's listen into my conversation with Jen and Jim.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM, with Jim Derrick and Jen Levine, both from the SAFE Coalition. Since there's been some title changes, I'll let you do your intro and figure out what the title changes are so I don't misspeak, because clearly we wanted to have this conversation for a while and we're finally here. So thank you for coming. I'm looking forward to this.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
We're excited to be here.
So I know you've been, 5 years in the making as a coalition, and then now actually becoming more of a service organization, still nonprofit based, but you also finally have some space, although under the circumstances, you can't really use it too much, can you?
Yeah, that's all true. So we started about 5.5 years ago as a group of folks in the community who were concerned about how substance use was impacting those that we love and care about. And that group of concerned citizens turned into a nonprofit organization that's brought a lot of other folks who have been personally and professionally impacted by addiction and substance use together. And while we've been working out of our living rooms and our cars and our garages, this past summer, we were lucky enough to secure an office space in Norfolk. And it's actually two units. So one unit is a fabulous meeting space, and the other unit is separate offices.
I had the opportunity to be there for your ribbon cutting open house type piece, which was, if I remember, second week of February or something. It was before 13th. Corona era.
Yeah, it was the 13th of February. Yeah, it's a great event. Appreciated you being there. Well attended too.
It was very pleased. Yeah, it was so big in the kind of the meeting room space. I spent much of the time as you were doing your introductions and talks, which were all good. I was just holding the door open for two reasons. One, because there was a crowd and some of us were outside, but we also, because the room was as full as it was, we also needed the fresh air to get circulated. Right. So
yes, you know, and I make things happen. Being in the back of the room, I appreciate that air circulation.
Yeah, we didn't want any. I mean, you're doing good work. We didn't want to create any other opportunities for our first responders that evening.
Right.
So, in terms of the role changes, I know there's Jen. I think you're the executive director now, and you had been clearly one of the board, and now have a slightly different role.
I do. So as we have grown and changed and developed, and now having this own space, we're really able to recognize what programs work well and where we should move and grow. And part of that was shifting and changing the way our organization functions. And so the best way that we knew how to do that, meeting with other local nonprofits and kind of looking into organizational structure, we really felt that having a board of directors as well as an executive director who really managed the business side was necessary for the best support for the community.
Mm. Yeah, we've really grown, Steve, over the past 5.5 years. And really, it's been a catch-up process because the organization has grown and its programming's grown so quickly. We've had to almost catch up organizationally to where we found ourselves. And so happily, we're in a situation now where Jen has made a bold leap of faith and parachuted out of her career previously with Riverside to take on the role of executive director. And she will be building out staff and a volunteer corps, which will be managing the business of the SAFE Coalition, the actual programming of the SAFE Coalition, and the board of directors will be appropriately engaged in oversight. And I was happy to step back in as president of the board of directors, a place that I started 5.5 years ago. But right. Again, you know, we've evolved. We're from the board of directors with their sleeves rolled up on one end being on the board and the other doing all of the volunteer work. And now we've evolved to a point where Jen is going to be managing staff and volunteers. And we're happy to have plenty of opportunities to have a lot of volunteer engagement. So it's been a joy.
Over the course of the time, at least from my observational role and clearly reporting on your various events and sharing those out as well. But yeah, you truly began as a coalition, just truly interested people, passionate people about the particular services you needed to do. And you were able to flex between the Narcan training, the Narcan deliveries, and all that. You had some great Chris Herron. Even more recently, I recall you, Jen, you participated in a, I think it was a PCC session at the high school that I ended up recording as part of, Franklin Matters before my Franklin TV introduction in collaboration formalized. But yeah, and that was insightful. And yet it was a tough conversation, and it was rather interesting because clearly it's a tough thing, especially when people, you know, there's still the stigma. As much as people want to get away from it, it's there. But having changed from that kind of coalition, realizing you now need to deliver the services with more of a standard board and a staff with Jen leading, I think that makes sense. That's a story to tell.
Yeah, it is a story, Steve. And I can speak as somebody, as you know, my qualifications to be with the SAFE Coalition are lived experience. You know, I don't have professional background training. I don't have what Jen has, which is a solid knowledge of the clinical aspects and components that go into making up programming and treatment options for people. But through my lived experience, I experienced what it was like to walk around in an environment where there wasn't any supportive services. Sure. There were no coalitions. There was very little information, even in the hands of experts, pediatricians, psychologists, on how to manage the intersection of mental illness and substance use disorder. And so it really, this is only 6, 7, 8 years ago that I was stumbling around in the dark. And the story is well documented. Jen Knight had written a wonderful email to Jeff Roy as she was getting her PhD out in California saying, hey, listen, I'm a Franklin High grad. You remember me from my times of advocating for women's hockey here in Franklin. Right. I'm here with another ask. And that's that I'd like your help in getting a group together of people, stakeholders that can start talking about and addressing the void between our understanding as a community of what's going on and all of these fatalities that were happening at that moment because of the opioid epidemic.
Sure.
That email and her subsequent follow-up and her passion and Jeff Roy's follow-up and Bob DeLorco's and others along with Jen pulling together a group in Franklin High School on June 30th of 2015 was the start of pulling together stakeholders that would break down the silos and start to have conversations around this important issue. So that rather than the schools talking about prevention on one side and having the police department looking at trending on another side and the two not meeting, we were bringing together stakeholders to start the broader conversation. And you're right, that's a grassroots coalition building type of effort.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But as someone who witnessed this and has been a direct benefactor of what the coalition has done. I'm in a community of people through the support groups that are struggling with loved ones. Mm-hmm. I've watched how the impact of what Jennifer's dreamed of and envisioned and has now executed and continues to execute has impacted those of us that are in that community. And the first thing is understanding. When you have a community that understands and empathizes. And as a result, destigmatizes what it is that you're going through. I can't overestimate. I cannot overstate how powerful that is. Mm-hmm. Because suddenly it's okay for a Jim Derrick to raise his hand and say, I'm experiencing some difficulties in my family and I want to have a conversation. What you do is you demystify it and you're no longer an other, right. You know, right. You're now incorporated as part of the community. And that's critical. Nobody should be alone when dealing with any type of illness, mental illness, substance use disorder included. And this has really flattened that curve, that area of misunderstanding. And I'm eternally grateful for that. Secondarily, we now have a situation where someone that's in my shoes or someone like me is walking down the street and they need help. There are literally dozens of opportunities for you to get help. You can walk into a town hall. You mm-hmm. can walk into a Steve Sherlock, Franklin Matters, a community stakeholder, sure. YMCA, police department, and you will be provided with likely our material, which will lead you back to supportive services in the community. And again, that can't be overestimated. And then the programming itself is, Jen is going to talk a lot more about that, but the creativity and passion and compassion of those that are involved on our board of directors and our countless volunteers and stakeholders that we have that are largely doing this as volunteers, by the way, I shouldn't say largely, are doing this as volunteers. Right. You know, Steve, it's you and I are of the same age, and we've had these conversations before. You get to a certain point in life where you realize the inherent goodness of people, when it shines through, mm-hmm. makes you feel really, really good about being a part of a community.
Right.
And this is one of those times for me. The last 5 years have shown me the inherent goodness in people and the passion and compassion that they bring to their fellow community members. And that's reflective in the programming that we're bringing to the community. And I'll end by saying this. Jen has done her trademark is to listen. She's schooled us on this from day one as a board of directors. Listen to what the community's saying and then build programming around what they are asking for. We are not here to tell them what they need. We're here to respond to what they want. And that has fundamentally changed the way has fundamentally instructed the way that we've built ourselves. And as a result, I think we've seen, great success and a really good reception around that. And I really applaud Jen Knight's vision on that and her dedication to it.
Yeah, I think the two keys there to set up, Jen, to the extent that she needs to set up, she doesn't. But the two keys is that the first step in any problem solving is recognition. And you mentioned that, and that's certainly, it's there, it's required. And then in order to adjust, you need to listen. And from your experience directly, and the other members of the, call it the board, but the coalition, and certainly Jen with the professional background, you've been able to flex. So I know while you've done a bunch of things, you've got more things coming once this corona piece kind of gets by us, hopefully.
We absolutely do. I mean, the early stages of the coalition was a group of people coming together. We didn't have a formalized name like the coalition or SAFE. And when I had originally reached out to Jeff Roy, I was just wondering if he thought it would be a good idea to have a support group for grieving parents at the YMCA, if they would give us space and could he make a phone call. Never ever in my wildest dreams did I think that we would be able to engage the community in conversations and have the community respond in a way that we were able to do something together. And the only reason why the coalition has been successful is because folks from the community have volunteered their time and their efforts. And, you know, Jim came to that June 30th, 2015 meeting with the title of dad, but also an incredible leadership skill set. And he was able to really rally folks in the community around this cause. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you 100% that we would not be a nonprofit organization if it wasn't for Jim's ability to bring people to the table and keep them at the table. you know, it takes all kinds to keep things going. And Jim and I, for 5.5 years, have been working together, both on our ability to listen and hear each other, and also to figure out how we can work well together with the larger community. It's been the best 5 years of my life. Mm-hmm. and I am so, so thankful for everything that's happened. And originally we started out of the opioid epidemic. You know, the opioid epidemic had impacted our community pretty significantly. And now as we sit here in 2020, certainly we provide supports for opioid addiction, and we provide supports for a whole host of other mental health and substance use concerns, because as the opioid epidemic has developed and shifted and changed, we as a coalition working with the community have developed mm-hmm. and shifted and changed.
Sure.
So our need to learn and listen is never stopping, because that is the only thing that's what we were founded on, and that's what drives us.
Yeah, and it's in this particular space, I mean, where do you draw the line? It's hard. Do you fix this, or do you try to go more towards the root, more into the social emotional learning piece, and then get more involved? And I know you've got a peer group at the high school. So yeah, where do you draw the line? And in this particular space, it's hard. So you have to listen and find out what's really required at the moment. And then from your position, you can say, well, this is how we can do that, and then go forward from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that collectively as a board, we all agreed on is that there are already incredible resources in our community and others locally that we don't need to recreate, because they already exist and they're wonderful. Mm-hmm. So where are those gaps, like Jim had mentioned earlier, and how can we fill those spaces with really solid pieces? So if you come to the coalition and you need mental health support, while we don't directly provide that, we can listen to the needs that you have and provide you with other opportunities in the community of folks that we know who manage that style of support. And we feel like it would be a great fit. And so really developing relationships with community partners has been huge for us as well, because we all know we can't do everything. So let's really focus in on the things that we want to be able to do well and the community is asking for. And we know that we can deliver on.
And I believe as part of that, vaping is one other, if you will, trend. I don't know necessarily, that's not the best word for it. It's certainly an issue. And even in these days of the coronavirus and the pandemic, people who are continuing to vape, and again, that's an addiction, present real other issues for themselves in that regards. And from what I understand, you can elaborate, I think that even just more than just them because of their vaping activity, it really impacts whoever's around them.
Certainly. So vaping is something that if you had asked Jim or I or anyone on the board 5.5 years ago, we wouldn't even really have known what you were focused on. We would have asked if you were talking about electronic cigarette use, because that mm-hmm. was more what was on the market.
Right.
And about 3 years ago, we started becoming more focused on that, on vape use. And that was mainly because a lot of other communities in Massachusetts were really struggling with vape use. We weren't seeing it as often, but we figured if other communities are managing this, we are going to have to figure out a way to do this as well. Mm-hmm. So we educated ourselves and we met with other community partners. And the big picture concern here is that adolescents, middle school and high school aged youth are able to buy vapes, which are electronic cigarettes, are able to use them pretty easily and pretty frequently. And the long-term effects that we're seeing are pretty concerning. So, you know, as the laws in Massachusetts around distribution and selling of vaporizers has shifted and changed, we've also really wanted to become pretty up-to-date and aware on, you know, what does marketing look like? How does it impact your chemical health right now? How does it impact your chemical health long-term? And how does it impact your environment? And by that, I mean, if you're an 18-year-old who's vaping in your bedroom and you have a younger sibling come in, does that impact secondarily, like a cigarette use would, the younger
child? The old secondhand smoke type.
Peace. Exactly. Exactly. And so what are the physical health concerns, and what are the, if any, mental health or addiction concerns? And as science has developed around vape use, our ability to provide education around that has developed as well. And so we were able a few months ago to partner with Stanford. Med school has a vaping and marijuana toolkit. And so we were able to partner with them to provide education and resources to adolescents who are using. You know, we had envisioned of having this wonderful classroom program, and right now it's kind of put on pause. But the big picture is that there are wonderful resources out there that we are able to partner with and provide real education around vaping, because it is a huge concern.
Yeah, and hopefully you'll be able to deliver that relatively sooner than later, because even if it's later, the issue itself has not gone away. If anything, it may be growing because of the additional stress because of the coronavirus being put on those individuals in those circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the interesting pieces around vape use is that we, about 3 years ago, started a program called Hidden in Plain Sight in the high schools. And the majority of parents that we communicated with during those presentations around vaping were 100% convinced that their child doesn't vape, and if they do vape, it's 100% water. And so having those challenging conversations back then around, well, if it isn't water, what else could it be? And then also, what does it look like? What does it smell like? How is it used? Is it used as a stress reliever? What are the long-term impacts? And so as the years have gone on, the Massachusetts regulations have changed, so they're not as easy to get. But certainly, since COVID has popped up in all of our lives, our support line has certainly increased. So before, we would be getting calls from the superintendent or the school principals asking for support and resources. And now we're seeing a huge shift in our calls, and it's calls from parents saying that they found a vape in their child's bedroom, in their backpack, in their pants when they were doing laundry, and that the child has said, yes, it's a vape, and yes, there's either THC, which is marijuana, or like what they call vape juice, which is like a flavored nicotine. And so that really starts the conversation of which direction we should go in for style of support. But it's just interesting how even 6 months ago, we were really working with the schools on providing education and resources. And now we're really working with parents and caregivers on what to look for and how to provide wraparound support at home.
Yeah. And our calls, speaking of our calls, Jen, they've really picked up, Steve, since this coronavirus, as you might anticipate. You know, a lot of these calls, we get a wide spectrum of calls. We get everything from mental health concerns through substance use, all sorts of substance use. As Jen mentioned, Jen does a great job in coaching parents on how to have styles of conversation with adolescents that don't that set up clear channels of collaboration, where they have a better shot at communication strategies. But the calls have really, really picked up. And one of the alarming trends that we see also is the normalization, which has been occurring over the past several years, normalization of marijuana use in teens.
Yeah.
And it's not a benign, you know, safe substance. And one of our missions is to be able to educate the youth and parents on what THC of today is and how it impacts the adolescent and developing mind, and also develop strategies to work with parents on how to communicate with their children about today's marijuana. It's a challenge with retail operations opening and, of course, medical marijuana being so widely accepted these days. So we have to flex and we have to stay current with what's going on. And we spend a lot of time educating ourselves so that we can be an asset to the public.
Yeah, certainly people can be on the for or against side, but realistically, no matter which side you're on, there are chemical components on the quality side, and certainly from what we've read, and you can corroborate, the THC of today is not the marijuana of, you know, a few years ago. And then even with the vaping, and if you start getting stuff off the market, the quality control on whatever is in there kind of goes out the window.
Yeah. When you have a product that can legally be sold as THC, they call it dabbing, waxing, oils, that might have concentrations anywhere up to 98% THC. Now you're starting not to talk so much about the plant marijuana and more the chemical component THC, mm-hmm. which in those high concentrations has a markedly different, reaction in the body. And anecdotally speaking to police, when they interact with people that are using that high concentration product, they notice behaviorally that it's a much different type of high, if you will. It's a much different personality change that they see. And certainly mm-hmm. from parents, as a parent that's experienced it, it's a much different look than maybe when we were growing up, Steve, and, you know, the marijuana was, 5 or 10 times less potent.
Mm-hmm. So sure.
It's definitely a changed landscape relative to what people consider to be either a product or byproduct of marijuana. And there's a spectrum that people need to, a continuum, if you will, of both potency and products, everything from edibles to medical marijuana side to smokable to vapable to waxes and dabs. And so it's really an education process that we really look to undertake, not just with marijuana, but with all substance use and parents and schools. We look to collaborate with schools. And while I'm on that subject, if you don't mind, Steve, I just wanted to mention, since we are on Franklin Matters, we have a seat on the Franklin Substance Abuse Task Force.
Yes.
Franklin Public Schools Substance Abuse Task Force, which is a really neat collaboration mm-hmm. that has been started by Peter Light, I believe, Jen. Wasn't that right?
I think Peter goes Light. Back that far. Lucas Sarah Jaguar, Hearns, I think, leads it currently.
I'm sorry?
Does Lucas Jaguar lead it now?
Lucas Jaguar does a wonderful job leading that. And it's for lack of a better word, it's a coalition of stakeholders from within and outside of the schools that come together to tackle the issue of how are we going to best work with our teachers, our health providers in schools, guidance counselors. How are we going to draw on all the assets of the community to create an environment in which our students are getting the best from us in terms of prevention, in terms of guidance and counseling, mm-hmm. In terms of awareness, and also in destigmatization, so that when they themselves experience a problem or their loved ones have a problem, they can raise their hands and ask for help. And I can tell you this model, which has been now working for, I guess, over 3 years now, has really produced some really interesting results. And I'd suggest really welcome people to go on to the Franklin Public Schools website and take a look at the Substance Abuse Task Force drop-down tab, and they'll see a book called The Ride Home, Ann Bergen chaired that committee and did a wonderful job in putting that together. And they'll see a bunch of resources on there, including links to the Safe Coalition and hidden in plain sight information. But I think it's another example of how this conversation that started 6 or 7 years ago has really brought about change in our community for the better. And we're really focused on pulling together and out of our silos and checking the egos at the door and really working mm-hmm. collaboratively to come up with solutions.
Right, right. And certainly from my Franklin Matters perspective, people watching and listening to the town meetings, school committee meetings, even planning board meetings as a new, whether it's a grower or a retail operation for medical or retail marijuana, go through the approval process there. They're being discussed, they're being reviewed, and yeah, there's some mitigation, so they're providing some additional funding to the town to help, which certainly helps your cause, but it's kind of like it's after the fact, and you need to get up front so that not so many people, maybe in an ideal world would be great, you know, not so many people to even use it to begin with, so you don't need to have to come along and help them after. But yeah, it's almost a vicious cycle. But it should not be a surprise because clearly, at least from my reporting perspective, I see a number of threads. There's always the school committee meeting has both the substance abuse and the school wellness advisory council updates on a regular basis. DeLarco and others sit on the town council, so there's periodically an update from the town council perspective. it's across the board if people want to listen to it. But a lot of time, I think people just kind of like, it goes in one ear and right out. It's just, it's here. Right.
We couldn't agree more.
but you're doing something about it. That's the best part.
And you know what? We're trying. It's like, we are all members of this community, and it's really challenging to ask for help. And it is debilitating to ask for help when you don't think that help exists. And so if we can plant a seed that we are here to support folks, regardless of what they need, you know, maybe they won't ask for support right now, but maybe in 3 years with a younger child, they know that we exist because they saw a presentation some other time in their life. And, you know, no questions asked. I mean, it's hard to say that you need support. It's hard to put a name to what that support might be. And so here we are. Open arms, open mind. we're all just trying to walk each other home, you know? Right. The way that we can do that is being nice and figuring it out together.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And in the show notes, we'll include certainly the links, as Jim mentioned, to the school page. We'll include your page, safecoalitionma.com, if I remember correctly. You've got a hotline number as well, which I know I've shared earlier. We don't have to repeat it here because people may not necessarily be writing down 508, whatever the number is, but it'll be in the show notes so they can go and get it or go back to your page and get it because it's on the page, as I recall. So
I would like to, if I could, Steve, I'd like to run down some of the supportive services for parents and loved ones of those substance users.
Absolutely.
So within our community and within our coalition, we have some partners, and one of those partners is Learn to Cope. Learn to Cope is an organization founded by Joanne Peterson some 14 years ago that is a peer-to-peer support organization for parents and loved ones of those struggling with substance use disorder. And those meetings are now held virtually. So if someone wants to reach out to learn, the numeral 2, cope, .org. That's info at learn the numeral 2 cope.org, and simply say in the subject line they want to come to the meetings, the Zoom meetings. There is a Monday night meeting that hosts the Franklin chapter every Monday night at 7 p.m. Another support group would be Road to Recovery. And Road to Recovery is a different style of the same type of support. It is a big book, 12-step meeting for parents of and loved ones of those struggling with substance use disorder. They can reach out to me personally at jderick, D-E-R-I-C-K, jderick50@hotmail.com and get information on that. We meet every Wednesday evening, and we will send you out the Zoom link. And beyond that, of course, Al-Anon exists, and anyone can look on the internet and find the local Al-Anon meetings. But and direct peer-to-peer support. I'm happy to speak to anybody that may be walking this walk. And from the standpoint of just sharing my experience, as we say, in Strength and Hope for recovery, because recovery happens. It happens all the time, and we celebrate it as it happens. So those are three supportive areas for parents and loved ones.
And yeah. we have grandparents raising grandchildren, which has been a huge need in our community, which again, 5 years ago, we never thought that we would need. And that group meets on Wednesdays. We have a high school peer-to-peer group that we do Zoom calls with. And we have another support program for grieving parents on Saturday mornings. In addition to our Narcan training and our grief counseling and our chaplaincy. So even though we're away from the office, we have a host of supportive programming. And of course, one-on-one support for folks who may call our support line. And we just added a newsletter that'll be sent out monthly. So if anyone's interested in that, they can go to our website and sign up for that, which will have our programming as well as helpful supportive tips for that month.
Yeah, because this one thing that I took away from the multitude of the meetings, particularly from Chris Herron, for one, it takes time to get addicted. It takes longer to get undone. The recovery is one day at a time, pretty much forever, because you hear even some people have gone 5, 10, 15 years, but then there's a relapse. You know, it's not one and done. You got to stay at it. So it's good to know that the support is there, because there's always going to be those opportunities.
You know, Steve, it's such a good point that you just made. Recovery is a lifetime adventure and journey. But it also, and I shouldn't say but, and it also is recovery for parents and loved ones that are suffering mm-hmm. from codependency. The mental health issue, which is substance use disorder, which is classified as a mental health, as a mental illness, it extends outward. And the family is captured in the family unit, however you vision your family. It could be right. an extended family. Right. It can even involve friends. But the dynamic that is set off by this illness is oftentimes, I'm going to call it a mirrored by family members. So as my son or daughter or loved one is experiencing a crash, I'll call it a crash or a low period of time, mm-hmm. so am I as the codependent loved yeah. one. And as they're experiencing maybe some hopeful signs, I'm experiencing, so I'm going along for that roller coaster ride. Yeah. And as someone that was in early recovery from substance use disorder said to me, they said, you're at a distinct disadvantage, Mr. Derek, when you're a parent or a loved one. We have something that numbs us as we ride that roller coaster.
Ooh, true. Yeah.
You don't have that. So it's you know, people used to say to me that I needed my own recovery. And I used to think, oh, please stop exaggerating. Recovery? Well, I'm fine. I'm just a dad doing, you know, cruising around. Right. Fact of the matter is people that are involved with loved ones do need their own support, their own recovery. That too is, I'm going to tell you, I celebrate it because it's brought about the best times of my life, independent of my loved one's substance use disorder. It's brought on a tremendous amount of empathy and communal understanding, and it's just been a very, very worthwhile pursuit. So I just want to encourage people that may feel be battling this that it's not in their minds. It really is a stressful and difficult period, and you do need, in my opinion, support. And you shouldn't be doing it alone. So please feel free to reach out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think especially even in this pandemic time when everybody, even quote the normal. How do you say normal? Because we're all in it. We still need, even the normal ones, that other support. Right. So we don't go to the extra bottle or the extra drink or the extra vape or whatever. It's a tough time period. But knowing there's help, knowing there's support, that's a good thing to have.
Yeah. And that's what we want to be to the larger community. I mean, certainly during this time, there are struggles and challenges that existed before. And right now, you know, as we all sit at home by ourselves, we're left so much more vulnerable to the darker parts of us that we're sometimes able to escape with others. And so we're here to provide that support. If we can't provide that support, we are always open to helping you find out or figure out the best way to get you that right support.
Mm-hmm. I think we've covered kind of the key pieces. We started with the org and the change and the evolution, Jen's new roles, the futures. We've touched on a bunch of the coalition services and the other organizations. Anything else offhand we need to add?
Well, in my new role, the only other thing that occurs to me is funding.
Funding, yes. Oh, by the way, you do need some money.
Well, do you want me just to do a little spiel on funding?
Might as well. We're here.
Okay. So I'm glad you asked, Steve. We have been funded over the past 5 years in large part due to the advocacy of our state rep, Jeffrey Roy, who has provided us with access to state grants in the amount of $150,000, but we have had some generous sponsorship from local community members, both businesses and individuals within the community, and we are so grateful for that. But on a budget of roughly $200,000 over a five-year period of time, you can imagine we are running a very, very lean machine. And as we grow and evolve into this new delivery model of services with Jen Knight at the helm, we need more money in order to sustain ourselves. So we are looking both to the community and to grants, a combination of those two, to be able to sustain ourselves in the future. And we hold our fingers are crossed that this COVID situation and the relative financial devastation to the state budgets will allow the state to still earmark money for us. But we recognize the reality that that may not be the case shortly. So we are going to be relying on the generosity of the community in order to maintain our services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and certainly while you're currently officed in Franklin, you serve a broader group of that and still operate out of, did I say Norfolk? I hope I did.
Yeah, our offices are in Norfolk, yeah.
Norfolk and Norfolk, but you were based, or at least initially based virtually or mobily from Franklin in your mm-hmm. cars and trunks, et cetera. Franklin at least has a reputation as being a community that does step up to help people. So that'll be good to draw on.
We took the posture early on. And I think maybe I'd like to say it was some grand design, but I think it was just because we were so busy and that we weren't paying anybody and that we were just lean and mean. But we really wanted to show the community the support. We really wanted to build something that was sustainable. We didn't want to have our hands out at the beginning mm-hmm. to say, you know, gee, we need money and then we'll respond. And it gets back to Jen's central philosophy, which she's executed so well, which is to listen to the community first and build mm-hmm. something that is reflective. And that's what we did. And now we're at a position where we're out far enough and we are clearly have made a mark. I often get asked, I really do, how can we help? And I think this is the time where we have to respond. Well, there is a way you can help. And the way we do sustain ourselves is through the generosity of our community partners. So if you're a business and you want to have a conversation about becoming a partner with us and providing some funding and engaging with us in our broader mission, which is the education and destigmatization of substance use disorder, please give us a call. Mm-hmm. If you're an individual and you find that you're looking for a place to give within the community, we would happily accept your donation. So that's our mission. It's going to be critical that we find, and I know we will, but it's going to be critical that we continue to let people know that that's how we're funded, that there isn't some magic going on behind the curtain mm-hmm. and we right. need the community support.
Agreed. No, and I think you've made the case so far in terms of what you've done over the years. So it is justifiable that it's needed and justifiable that we still want it and should thereby continue to support it in whatever way we can so you continue to do what you need to do. So, indeed. Well, thank you very much for taking your time in your busy schedule in this virtual challenging world of ours. And
thank you, Steve. I want to just thank you for what you're doing with Franklin Matters. It's a great program, great podcast, great content. Keep it up.
Thank you. Without you doing what you do, I would be twiddling thumbs. Well, maybe not exactly, but you know.
Not based on your grandchild's picture. You got a beautiful little grandbaby to take care of.
Yeah.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.